For anyone, regardless of party affiliation or inclination, who is watching the 2016 Republican presidential race unfold, it is abundantly clear that the Republican Party is in a state of crisis. With a divisive and unprecedented number of candidates, the leader among them a fully unqualified disruptive force, according to our next guest, the Republican Party is actively cannibalizing its chances of taking the White House in 2016. With roughly 55 million registered Republican voters in the United States, another 42 million registered independents for the taking, the Republican Party faces a crossroads. They must bring smart, practical, young, and optimistic conservative voices to the party. The question is, how do they do that? Enter Daily Caller columnist, frequent MSNBC and CNN commentator and conservative Matt Lewis, one of the leading voices among young conservative writers. He makes his case in the new book, Too Dumb to Fail, how the GOP betrayed the Reagan Revolution to win elections and how it can reclaim its conservative roots. The book is published by Hachette, and we welcome Matt K. Lewis to the roundtable this morning. Matt, nice to have you aboard. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to have you on the program. So what do you make of the situation that we are in? I'm assuming that you were writing this book as all of this was starting to take place. I am also assuming that you could never have imagined that we would be in the place where we are right now.
Yeah, if anybody won out of this whole thing, it's me. I would have never thought. I mean, you know, we have Sarah Palin endorsing Donald Trump, and you know, I started writing this book a couple years ago, warning about the identity crisis in the Republican Party, the dumbing down of conservatism, and the populism that was overtaking conservatism. And you have the week my book comes out, Sarah Palin endorsing Donald Trump, and Donald Trump being the by far the front runner in this race. So I feel like I should go buy a Powerball ticket because I think I might be on a lucky streak here.
Well, who's lucky, really?
Well, yeah, the country suffers, but for my sake, book sales, it should be good.
Sure, absolutely. Is it difficult to make sense, though, of what's going on? As you said, you started writing this some time ago. Could you, even now, looking back, see this coming in some way?
Yeah, I could. I did not envision Donald Trump doing as well as he did, and I did not envision him being the you know, the voice that would, you know, sort of the person who would give voice to this populist strain on the right. But I did see it coming, and I've seen it coming for about 5 years, actually. I first started writing columns that were looking at the Republican Party and the conservative movement and troubles I saw brewing about 5 years ago. And it was when you had Senate candidates like Christine O'Donnell in Delaware and Sharon Angle in Nevada, who started running, and this was sort of on the heels of Sarah Palin having lost as a Republican running mate running for vice president, and sort of becoming a more radical populist Tea Partier. But Christine O'Donnell and Sharon Angle started doing things like playing the victim card in a way that most conservatives traditionally haven't been comfortable with, and playing the identity politics. Us versus them. It wasn't left versus right. It was the outsiders against the establishment, the man who was keeping us down. And this was very different for conservatism, this sort of rhetoric, this populist anger and frustration. That's when I started picking up on it. And really, it's just snowballed. And again, here we are, amazingly, when I think Republicans had this really amazing bench of young conservative rising stars, including people like Marco Rubio, who I think really could and potentially still could be the nominee, take conservatism to the 21st century and sell it to diverse Americans. And yet, rather than going in that direction, the party, at least for now, looks like it's going to be headed in the Donald Trump direction. And I think in the long run, that's a very dangerous direction.
What is it about, and this just isn't a Republican thing, this is really an election and a campaign thing, which is the fact that we want somebody as an outsider, which is very odd because, of course, the analogy that has been made over and over again is that if you get your shoes fixed, you want somebody who knows how to fix shoes. If you go to a doctor, you want somebody who knows how to fix your appendix. You would assume that there is something to be said for an experienced politician.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, in different times in our history, we oscillate between wanting experienced statesmen versus people who are less experienced. I think now that we've really gone to the extreme, we've sort of gotten away from trying to elect one-term senators, and now we're looking at people who've never been elected to anything. I mean, there was one point this summer where if you added up the top four Republicans in the race, and that would have been at the time, it would have been Donald Trump, Ben Carson, Carly Fiorina, and Ted Cruz, you would have four candidates garnering about 66% of the vote, and they had a collective 3 years of governing experience between them. It's really amazing. But again, this happens throughout history. You know, you go back to the founding fathers, you know, the first six presidents from Washington to John Quincy Adams were these sort of elitists, you know, very intelligent, very elite, wise, prudent statesmen. And then you have Andrew Jackson come along, this sort of rough riding, old hickory populist. And he upsets the apple cart, and he ends up beating John Quincy Adams, who may be the most experienced man ever to hold the office of president, and the public tosses him out. So we do go through these populist stages every once in a while.
Matt Lewis is our guest. The name of the new book is Too Dumb to Fail. It is published by Hachette. So in your investigation, where did things start to go off the tracks?
I guess the first thing I would say is, unlike a lot of people who write books like this, critics of the Republican Party, I'm not a liberal. A lot of them are liberals, and a lot of their recipe for success is the Republican Party can fix itself by becoming more liberal. And that's not my thesis. My thesis is actually that conservatism is a proud intellectual philosophy that goes back possibly to Aristotle, but certainly to Edmund Burke. And it's a proud philosophy that that we've gotten away from, and there's been a dumbing down. And I actually see the high point is the Reagan era. So I'm not anti-Reagan. I actually love Ronald Reagan. And I think that that was kind of the culmination where you had this perfect tension between preserving intellectual integrity and sort of high-mindedness of philosophy, but also being able to build a coalition large enough to govern. And I do think that after the Reagan years, and there have been some fits and starts, but by and large, Republicans have traded in electoral popularity for philosophical consistency.
One of the quotes that came out of E.J. Dionne's book came out, I believe, the same day as yours. As you say, many people are writing about this, E.J. being one of them. And there's a quote in that book, and he mentioned it on our program, which is the Republicans, in looking to regain that Reagan ideology, one of the problems is, the quote being, it depends on which Reagan you want to copy.
It is interesting that Reagan has become all things to all people. And if you look at everyone in the conservatism, everybody within the conservative spectrum today, whether it's Bill Kristol, you know, a neoconservative, or Patrick Buchanan, a paleoconservative, they would all call themselves Reaganauts or Reaganites. And so, you know, Reagan had a populist strain, and he also, though, was much more learned and cosmopolitan and well-read than he probably got credit for. And I think that there's a side of Reagan that was very optimistic and a side of Reagan that was inspirational and cheery. And that's kind of the part that I'm really attracted to and I think we need to return to.
There were, at one point, 17 candidates running for president of the United States this cycle on the Republican side. What does that say about the party in that they each had a following, however small, and it has winnowed down a little bit, not a lot, and yet still we have the two big names, Cruz and Trump, at the top, and what we learn from just that equation of the moment.
It is interesting that we had so many candidates, and I don't want to read too much into that. I mean, what's better to have one candidate we're going to coronate or have this huge field? I would look more at the motives, though. Why are so many people running, and why are they so why will they not get out? And I think, unfortunately, a lot of the people who are running are not necessarily running for the right reasons or the right motives. And that actually speaks to the title, or at least touches on the title of this book. It's called Too Dumb to Fail. And part of what it's about, it harkens to the too big to fail idea. Remember, too big to fail, the financial crisis.
Sure.
You had these financial institutions that had perverse incentives, and they had moral hazards. And that's what we have right now on the right. I see it with political pundits, and I see it with political candidates. They have perverse incentives to say or do controversial or crazy things that help them. They go out, they say something, you know, crazy or stupid, and they go up in the polls amazingly. But collectively, it damages the brand, the Republican brand. And so you end up having a situation where running for office, running for president, isn't done necessarily to win the office or to make America better. It's done to get yourself more attention, to get yourself a cable news show or a book deal. And then you say or do things that get yourselves ratings and attention, but all at the expense of the movement. And here we are at a time when Republicans have a real chance to win this presidential election. You know, you could have two or three Supreme Court justices at stake in the next election, and we have people playing games in this reality show that we're calling a presidential election.
So, as of right now, let's look at the Donald Trump scenario, and I will ask the question, because you brought it up, which is, as of right now, how much damage do you believe he has done for the brand? And the follow-up is, how much of that damage is short-term, how much of it is long-term?
I think that it's possible that if Donald Trump faded away tomorrow, that there would not be as much damage as people might think, that Republicans and conservatives could get past it. As amazing as that is, I really do think that's the case. But if Donald Trump becomes the nominee, that's a different thing. Then it becomes impossible to distance yourself from what Donald Trump stands for. And some of what Donald Trump stands for and some of what Donald Trump has said is very toxic and very indefensible and very dangerous for a party that wants to win in the 21st century and a party that needs to attract more people than just working-class whites who are old and live in a rural area and are married. Don't get me wrong. We need working-class whites who are old and live in rural areas and are married, but Republicans need to attract other people as well. And the problem with Donald Trump is I think he doubles down on this type of Republican and really ultimately would turn off a lot of other folks who really should be part of the conservative coalition if it's about ideas and not just cultural signaling.
Do you see his message changing dramatically in a general election?
Well, I do think that Donald Trump has this amazing chameleon-like ability to change. We saw it happen in the debate recently when somebody said, "Why are you attacking Ted Cruz now when you weren't attacking him before?"
Right.
And Trump said, "Well, he wasn't a threat to me before." You know, he just like admits it, and he changes immediately, just 180 degrees. He's been saying that Ted Cruz is my friend. I'm not going to attack him, and he gets away with it. So, look, I do think it's possible that Donald Trump could pivot and run a more centrist campaign in a general election. But I think in order to beat Hillary Clinton, he would have to engage in activity that I think would be somewhat unseemly. And I think that he would have to sort of go try to double down on the anger and the frustration among a lot of working class whites. And it might work politically in the short term, actually. But I do think there could be long term consequences to running that kind of campaign.
Matt Lewis is our guest. The name of the book, Too Dumb to Fail, How the GOP Betrayed the Reagan Revolution to Win Elections and How It Can Reclaim Its Conservative Roots. So let's focus on the second part of the subtitle. How can it reclaim its conservative roots?
So I spend the last third of the book talking about that. And I don't get into too much policy a little bit, but not too much. I talk about other things, and the way I would boil it down is my take is what I call modernize, not moderate, or modernize, don't moderate. And so my recipe, unlike a lot of people who've written these books, it's not for the Republican Party to become more liberal, but it's for the Republican Party to modernize. And there's a whole lot of steps that that includes. One, of course, is attracting Hispanics. Now, I don't necessarily think you have to declare amnesty to attract Hispanics, but I think you can't let Hispanics believe that you hate them. If you look at what Pete Wilson did in California a couple decades ago, that's the message that Republicans often send. We don't like Hispanics. That's the unfortunate message. But it's possible to win those votes. Look, in Texas, as recently as 2014, John Cornyn, a Republican senator, won the Hispanic vote in Texas. So it can be done. And so that's part of it. So I think that certainly is an important part. The other thing has to do with, I mentioned earlier, about cultural signaling. So if there are a lot of people, young people, millennials, urbanites, cosmopolitan Americans, increasingly educated Americans. By the way, one of the number one predictors of whether or not you like Donald Trump is if you attended college or graduated. College graduates much less likely to support Donald Trump. Mm. So we're having more and more Americans who are college educated. A lot of these folks really should be conservative by many counts, but they're not going to be if what culturally being a conservative is looking like Boss Hogg. If being a conservative means driving a truck, living in a McMansion, and having a rebel flag, a Confederate flag up, that's not going to attract a lot of millennial college grads. But what about the guy, I'm in New York right now, what about the guy who orders an Uber on his smartphone, hops in an Uber, gets on StubHub and orders baseball tickets, and goes to a game? That guy, in my opinion, should be a conservative. He's entrepreneurial. He's not going to want onerous regulation stifling competition and entrepreneurship. And I don't think that guy's going to want to trust the federal government to manage his retirement account when he's managing everything on his smartphone. So I think that person very well could be a conservative who would vote for Marco Rubio, who might be attracted to his story about the American dream, the son of immigrants. But he's going to be repelled and turned off if Donald Trump is the face of the Republican Party. So, again, there's a lot to it, but I think that gives you a sense for what I'm calling for here, and I think Donald Trump would be the exact wrong direction.
You talk in that latter third of the book about acceptance, and why do you think that the party is not good at the acceptance of the reality that we have before us?
Well, yeah, I talk about the Republican Party his current situation, like if you were confronting an alcoholic and you had to have an intervention and, you know, the 12 steps, and the first step is acceptance. And, but the Republican Party has been lying to us, and it's been, and it hasn't been willing to face acceptance. And it tells us lies. It tells itself lies. Like, it'll tell itself there's a million evangelicals that stayed home in the last election. And if we can just get them to show up, will win. And it tells itself lies like there are all these working class whites, millions of them in Ohio, and they just didn't like Mitt Romney. But they'll come out and vote Republican if we just give them something to believe in. And the problem with that is, even if it is true this election, a really hard look at the long-term demographics pose a major problem. You know, I just mentioned Texas. I was talking about John Cornyn, a Republican senator who won the Hispanic vote in Texas as recently as 2014. Why is that important? Because in about 20 years, whites, Anglos in Texas will account for about 38% of the vote in Texas. What happens if Texas becomes a blue state? What if the Hispanics in Texas become like the Hispanics in California and they vote disproportionately Democrat? Then we have a situation where Republicans literally can never win electorally on electoral map, can literally never win another presidential race again. You could argue, well, that's why we need to start deporting people. But I think it's much more realistic to say, no, Republicans can win those votes. They're winning them in Texas. You're not going to deport 11 million illegals. You can certainly toughen border laws, and you can secure the border. You ought to do that. You should do that. But you have to be smart. There's no reason that, look, I believe in conservatism. I believe it can win in the free market of ideas. We can win votes. There's no reason Hispanics ought not to be voting conservative if they want to live the American dream. We can win those votes as long as we're not intentionally pushing them away. But if you look at the demographic trends, it's not just ethnic. It's education. More and more Americans are graduating college every year. The more that they graduate college, the less likely they are to vote Republican. More and more Americans are moving to cities. Guess what? The more they move to cities, the less likely they are to vote Republican. Very disturbing trends if Republicans don't get a handle on this.
The one topic I want to finish up with is the media. And you make the point in the book, and it's a compelling point, that the GOP has lost its intellectual bearings. Often, of course, in our current, and you mentioned Sarah Palin and Donald Trump and that endorsement, of course, there's a lot of talk about the liberal media. Do you believe, however, that the conservative media, that Fox, has damaged that intellectual base in some way over the past decade or so?
Yes, I do. It's interesting because, again, this is one of those things where you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, I'm old enough to remember the bad old days when there were only basically three networks, and there was a liberal media bias and a filter, and conservatives didn't have a voice. And the rise of alternative media has leveled the playing field. I wouldn't have a job if it wasn't for the rise of the conservative blogosphere and the alternative, you know, media outlets. And I think that that it's been very healthy in many ways. I think that, you know, pushing back on all sorts, you know, we might not even know about Monica Lewinsky if it wasn't for the Drudge Report. I mean, the mainstream media may never have covered that story. So I don't want to attack alternative media or conservative media. On the other hand, I think it is fair to say that that some of what happens on conservative talk radio is irresponsible and actually harms the conservative movement more than it helps it. And I think that some of what we see on cable news, including conservative outlets, is really dumbed down. I mean, if you see the guy from Duck Dynasty, or you'll turn on Hannity and you'll see like a race car driver or Kid Rock giving their political punditry. I don't think I need to expound on why that's like patently absurd, and it's a far cry from, you know, firing Line and Bill Buckley having, you know, I don't know, an economist or a philosopher on to talk about politics. So, yeah, it's a double-edged sword. There's a good side of it. I'm glad that we have alternative media, but you know, it also leads to some dumbing down that I think is unfortunate.
Do you get accused of being too even-keeled?
That's an interesting accusation. The funny thing is, you know, I think I have a conservative, what we used to call a conservative temperament, which now you might call moderate, but I call it conservative. I try to be introspective and call them as I see them. And, you know, when you go down the list of things, I would be what you would consider a hardcore right winger if we went down the list of things I believe in. I'm strongly pro-life. I'm strongly pro-Second Amendment. I'm for low taxes. I'm a free marketer. You get on the list of what we at least used to call all the conservative litmus tests. And I basically check off every box, but I'm not mad. And then you have someone like, say, Ann Coulter, who I would bet is actually less conservative than me if you went down the litmus test and checked off the list. But she's more angry than me, and so that becomes the perception is that she's more conservative than me.
And the perception, again, wrapping up, but the perception being that someone from the other side could work with you as opposed to an Ann Coulter.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And you know, I have to plead guilty. I do have I have liberal friends out there, and I think they're just really misguided. They're good people, most of them. They're just really misguided.
And right back to you, right? The name of the book is Too Dumb to Fail. It is published by Hachette. Matt Lewis, a great pleasure. The book is very entertaining and very important. I thank you very much for being so thoughtful on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, Too Dumb to Fail is the name of the book. Matt Lewis is the author. It's published by Hachette. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.